ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. Some of Australia's biggest ag lobby groups want an independent review of the federal government's decision to allow in more US beef imports. The Prime Minister, though, appears to have shut the gate on that idea.
There has been an independent review. It took 10 years.
And that's it? That's,
the decision has been made.
Okay.
And it was made independently at arm's length of any political decision.
Will any US beef actually come to Australia this year? You'll be hearing from the US Meat Export Federation in just a moment. Also this afternoon, a look at the most colourful cows on display at the Royal Darwin Show. And you'll be learning about the pressure that is mounting to release a herpes virus in the Murray Darling. These stories and plenty more coming up this afternoon on the Country Hour. Let's get amongst it. We're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. And g'day if you've tuned in via the podcast. Australia's largest supplier of tropical snapper launched a brand new fishing trawler on the weekend. The vessel is called Australia Bay. Millions of dollars have been spent building it, and it's now in Darwin, ready to start catching fish for the company Australia Bay Seafoods. I went along to the launch to see the champagne bottle smashed against the bow and to learn more about the company's plans.
That's how they do it.
G'day, my name's Mike O'Brien. I'm from Australia Bay Seafoods. We're today just had our christening of our brand new boat that we've taken 2 years to build in Haiphong in Vietnam. We built it and then we steamed it all the way back. It took us 14 days of steaming to get it here. The boat performed well through all sorts of different weather. She averaged just over 10 knots for the trip, so she has done everything that we have asked, and for the amount of time and money spent, we're very happy. It's an exciting time for NT Fisheries.
Tell us more about this boat.
The boat, she's 31.64 metres long. She's 9 metres wide. She has a main engine, which is a K38 Cummins, which is about 850 to 900 horsepower. She's got a Heimdall gearbox, which allows us to do variable pitch instead of a fixed pitch prop. So she's carries 105,000 litres of fuel. She's got a lot of different new things that we've been able to develop over the last, 10 years of our old fleet. And it's just exciting to see it all come together with the owner's input of what they wanted and being able to produce it for them.
Yeah, and where we're standing, it is a trawler and the nets are right here. Can you tell us a bit about the nets being used on a brand new trawler compared to something that was around 20 years ago?
Well, the gear that we're using here is what we use on all our boats. It's proven. It protects the bottom as best as you can with a trawl. So the gear we've been using now for five or six years. We've started to use zips in our cod end to allow some of the bigger animals to get out. So we've done along with our TEDs and all the other environment things we're doing. We're pretty excited of what we can do with our nets.
The launch here today in Darwin. Where to next for this vessel?
Well, now I have to get it flagged in Australia. I need to get the AMSA survey up and sorted.
So it's not off fishing tomorrow?
No. I still have at least another week of paperwork to get us licensed and in a position. And then we'll go out and do sea trials and trawling trials. Hopefully we'll do that next weekend. And then 3 or 4 days after that, we should be sending her on a maiden fishing voyage.
And can you explain to our audience the target species for a boat like this one?
Okay, we we target red snapper. 85% of the fish that we catch is crimson or saddle tail. We work well off the coast. We work into the deeper water on our borders with Indonesia and all those sorts of places. We'd like to be able to fish more grounds, but you know, we have what we have, and it's like farming. We move from one area to the next. We don't run each area into the ground, so our fishery is in really good order. We finished a survey a few years ago that showed it, that it was as good as 30 years ago. So again, we're pretty proud in what we do in sustainability within our fishery in Northern Territory.
This company is already Australia's biggest supplier of tropical snappers. How much bigger does this now make you, this new boat?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it means that we, instead of losing time when I've got to pull a boat out and refit it, I will be able to keep the three boats working each year, and I refit them once every 4 years. So it actually, they will increase our catches to a degree, but it will allow me to maintain my catches. For example, we've got the territory leader up on the slip here in Darwin. And we'll probably spend $1.5 million in doing her up, but she'll take 3 or 4 months for us to do that. So the new boat will slip into that. Then next year we got another boat that we have to do. So it's more maintaining our ability to fish all year round with the capability that we have. So
it's a big investment. What gives you confidence in this industry, Michael?
Well, you know, it's. I have to talk about Gary Kessels and Bill Passy. You know, they're the guys that own the company and have developed the fishery over the years. But they have a strong belief in the fishery. They feel that all the effort that they've put in sustainable fishing has given them the opportunity to put a boat. And plus, they're very proud that they've been able to bring a... This will be the first purpose-built demersal fishery boat that the NT has seen. So it's pretty exciting for them. They came on board yesterday for the first time, and they were really happy with where they'd seen their money spent, because it is a large investment. You know?
Are you willing to share roughly what it is?
It's just over eight million. You know, it's give or take a little bit. We're still fine-tuning it, but for what we've got, the quality of Vietnam's ability to do steel work is impressive. It's all the things in between that are the challenges. So yeah,
well, all the best with this new boat and what's ahead. Thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour.
No worries at all. Thank you very much.
If you're tuning in, this is the Country Hour. My name's Matt Brand, and I'm at the official launch of a brand new fishing trawler called Australia Bay. This is a big moment for the company Australia Bay Seafoods and its founder, Bill Passy, who is in Darwin. Bill, tell us about today and what it means to you.
Well, it's a special day christening this beautiful vessel. It's a big job to build a boat, especially overseas. There's lots of dangers involved in that, and a lot of equipment to be sent over there to come back, and to see the vessel finally here tied up in Darwin Port is one hell of a relief, I can tell you. And and she looks even better than I thought she was going to look, so proud as punch.
Do you mind sharing with our audience the story about how this company started and how you sailed up in a wooden boat 37 years ago looking for an opportunity?
Yeah, well, I started in the industry very young. I left school and home the day before I was 14, packed my case and from the bush, and went and got a job working at a processing factory on a crayfish and living under a couple of sheets of iron, and got the job and worked on the boats as well and saved some money, and at 18 bought a little boat and went from there. It's a big story, but bottom line is I ended up, after 22 years in the crayfishing, I decided to do something different. My back was already in trouble. I had to get onto a bigger boat, and so I bought an old wooden boat and sail from Fremantle up here, which is a long way with a a compass and a slide rule and an Admiralty chart, which had most everything missing off it, and no electronics or satellite navigation or any of that. So certainly had to have your wits about you to survive the trip. But it was challenging and enjoyable, and I ended up in Darwin. We're looking for something different to do, and looked at the charts to see where there might be some fishing grounds to go and do some drop lining, and then I went out and developed the Timor box, the drop line fishery out there. But then the Thailanders were here, and they were bringing in lots of fish, and most of them were going overseas on the motherships. But I saw them unloading, and I thought, wow, if they can do that, so can I. I don't know how to do it, but that never stopped me before. While we're looking here, we can look across there on that wall over there. There's some old bits of pipe that's been laying there for years. So I got a 90 angle grinder and cut it up and a bit of a welder and made a frame and got an old back end of a D2 Caterpillar dozer and bolted to the wharf and bought an old net off Ludwig Swenning for $2,000 and put it together and went out and started from there. So then I had to design nets and learn what to do, and I did. And got a boat and got another boat, and then decided to get a partner to put it together so I could see where we wanted to go, and we're here, we are together, been partners with Gary for some 28 years now. We made it work successfully. We're really two old blokes now and lost still a lot of confidence in industry enough to spend a few bob like this on a new boat.
Yeah, what makes you invest and still be so passionate in an industry focused on tropical snappers, Bill?
I feel that the quota system is a wonderful system in Australia. They allocate so much fish for the fishery. We do every 3 or 4 years about 4 month survey at $1.84 million cost to us, by the way, just in case you missed it. And we survey the whole fishery. Fisheries then can look and see what stock there is. They can adjust that quota. We take about 10% a year. So it gives us confidence it's going to keep going. You've got to have that in any business. We have it in this business. As long as they don't change that, it's secure. That was part of my speech earlier. It's got to be secured. Don't change from that. Once we have that, we then have the confidence to move forward and invest in the fishery. And my grandson is just there. He's the only one grandson. He's 18 years old, and he's everything to me. And my son's at sea on another boat right now. And that makes me invest and go forward. It gives me the confidence for the future.
And you also alluded today that demand is going really well. You mentioned maybe you should have built a bigger boat.
That was seriously a joke.
But demand is good, hey?
You can't get them any bigger than this into the duck pond. It's as big and it's about as much money as anyone would ever want to spend on a vessel. So. But the demand is very strong. We currently don't export. We don't need to export. Everything is consumed in Australia. We have Queensland fishery coming on that may be extended, and we may have to sell a bit overseas. We don't know yet. We should look at that. But at this point of time, the Australian market is so strong. We've been doing it for a long, long time. As I say, Coles, Woolworths and Costco and IGA and pretty well everyone else handles our fish, so we can handle another 1 million kilos and wouldn't be an issue. It's a good industry to be in, but you've got to do it right. You've got to produce good quality product. You've got to be regular. You've got to do all the things right to make it work.
And just finally, can we talk champagne? What's the origins of smashing the bottle against the bow? Do you know much about the history of all of that?
No, I don't actually know a lot about it. All I do know is that many bottles I've seen in the past don't break, and they call it bad luck. And I've even on the Ocean Harvest, they had a thing and it didn't work. And I just got the bottle, walked up to the bow with my bare hands of the bottle and smashed it on the anchor because I'd had enough of playing, trying to break this bottle. And that's... but I was assured that was going to work today.
Yeah, that was quite a setup.
It not just worked, it totally exploded because they knew... Everyone was getting the sack if it didn't. That's the reality of that. I don't know the originality of it or where the origins of it came from, but it's not a bad idea.
Now, lots of luck for the Australia Bay. Thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour, Bill Passy.
Thanks, Matt. Always good to see you. Pleasure.
That is Bill Passy, founder of Australia Bay Seafoods, one of the legends of the NT seafood sector. On the weekend, his company launching this brand new fishing trawler. Keep an eye out for it. It's called Australia Bay.
G'day guys, I'm Billy. I'm a trap fisherman here in the Northern Territory, and we're today unloading our catch from the last 2 weeks fishing out in the Kimberleys, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
It's a quarter to one. The gates are now open, so will Australia see any beef from the United States this year? In a moment, you will hear from the US Meat Export Federation. But first, let's have a song. On the weekend, you might have come across the ABC's hottest 100 countdown of Australian songs. It was organised by Triple J and Double J. And more than 2.6 million people voted in this countdown. 2.6 million. 100 Aussie songs. And not one country music track. Not one. No songs by John Williamson or Ted Egan or Troy Cassidaly. Keith Urban doesn't even get a run. Chad Morgan. Chad didn't get a run. And I think it's bordering on criminal that this man did not feature in the top 100 of Aussie songs. What sort of countdown really is it if there's no Slim?
I'm a ringer from the top end, where you gotta know your job and what you're doing each day. And nobody does the job better than a ringer from the top end. That's right.
Now there's a tune. On the text line, Angus in Alice Springs this afternoon says, exactly, Matt, Slim Dusty is Australian music. Another message here that says that 100 countdown of Aussie songs, no Slim Dusty, not worth the piece of paper it's written on.
Every day, all around Australia, extraordinary people create moments that inspire. See them, hear them. All you have to do is nominate them at australianoftheyear.org.au.
Big story last week was that Australia has opened the gate to more imports of US beef. Not everyone is convinced it's a good idea, with groups such as Cattle Australia and AgForce in Queensland calling for an independent scientific review of this decision. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese was on the ABC's Insiders program and told David Spears there's already been a review and the decision has been made.
The Trump administration is congratulating itself and claiming a win after Australia agreed to allow American beef in or change the restrictions that have been there. Did this have anything to do with Donald Trump?
No. This has been a process that has been there for 10 years, the review process. And in 2019, the decision to block US beef imports was lifted. So American beef could come in. The issue was over beef that had come from Canada or Mexico to the United States, and then whether it could be traced, whether those arrangements could ensure that our biosecurity was looked after.
Did Donald Trump raise this with you directly?
No. Donald Trump, though, did raise it at the so-called Liberation Day. Of course, he raised it publicly. And so his views were well known. And the Americans, under before Donald Trump was assumed the presidency in January, in December they made some changes, and then at the beginning of this year, some further changes.
Okay, so Trump didn't raise this with you in a phone call? Or?
No.
Okay.
Which satisfied the agency that looked at this, the department, independently of government. This wasn't a political decision. They looked at it, said they've satisfied the requirements.
Is it just a remarkable coincidence that Trump has publicly said this is a problem, and then this independent process says, okay, we're going to change?
Yeah, absolutely. And Donald Trump himself said just a couple of days ago that was the case, that he wasn't aware that Australia was going to do this.
Nonetheless, the industry here still has concerns. They want more detail and they want a review, an independent technical review of the decision. Will they get one?
Well, be very clear. The industry, on the morning of the decision, they were consulted beforehand. They knew the decision was coming and on the morning gave an interview on ABC Radio that backed in the decision.
Then they had a departmental briefing and said, look, we still...
No, they had a deep... They had already had a briefing before then.
Nonetheless, they want a review.
Then the National Party decided to politicise the issue.
Oh, so you think the industry has been led by the National
Party? Well, the National Party decided to politicise the issue. It is... Look, these issues are really serious. And
will there be a review?
I certainly understand. There has been a review. It's taken 10 years.
Okay, but the industry wants a review of that review.
There has been an independent review. It took 10 years.
And that's it?
The decision has been made.
Okay.
And it was made independently at arm's length of any political decision.
That's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese speaking to David Spears on Insiders. Meanwhile, over in America, the US Meat Export Federation says the decision by the Australian government is long overdue. The Federation's Senior Vice President of Communications, Joe Sheely, had a chat to Megan Hughes about the opportunities that this now could create for US beef producers.
Well, this move is long overdue. Most countries that to which we export beef have lifted BSE-related restrictions many years ago. We faced a lot of those after the first BSE case in 2003, but gradually virtually all of those markets reopened, Australia being one of the last. And so we think it's an overdue move. We do agree with the prevailing opinion in Australia that it's not going to result in a large volume of U.S. beef coming to Australia. But nevertheless, in the sense of showing a commitment to science-based trade and fair trade, we think it is a proper move on the part of the Australian government.
That's what I've been hearing here as well, that it doesn't seem like there will be a lot of US beef exported to Australia. But where do you think there are opportunities for US beef producers and exporters to enter the Australian market?
Those opportunities are most likely to surface in the high-end food service sector, the restaurant sector, especially with chefs that are perhaps looking for a particular niche with customers, looking for something unique to offer. So that's where we would expect to see the most immediate opportunities. You never really know until market opens where the opportunities are going to emerge. But that would be our best estimate, is that we would see smaller volumes go into Australia, but probably in the high-end restaurant sector where somebody's looking to for a unique offering.
Now, the Australian government has said one of the reasons that they were able to lift this restriction is work that the US industry has done in regards to traceability, and that there's a higher level of traceability in the system. Could you explain some of that work that's been done?
Traceability is certainly a factor in all of this, but what it really comes down to is that the remaining restrictions are similar to those that other countries have lifted years and years ago. When you look at, we do have a somewhat integrated North American livestock industry. We do bring in feeder cattle, for example, from Canada. We usually bring in feeder cattle from Mexico. That border is closed temporarily due to some security issues. But there's a high level of scrutiny with as far as the cattle that we allow to enter the country. And one point I'd like to make on the beef side is that for us in the industry, that we are often making the argument for free and fair trade, that's going to be easier to do now that the Australian market is open. As I said, even though we don't anticipate moving a large volume of beef to Australia, it's really hard to make an argument for fair trade when the Australian market was completely closed to U.S. beef, and yet we are the largest destination for Australia's beef exports. We import a lot of lean trimmings from Australia's beef industry. We have a need for that product. That's an example of the market working, but it's difficult sometimes for people in the U.S. to understand the fairness of that if the Australian market is closed. We do appreciate the Australian government finally making this move. Again, we feel it's overdue, and even though this is not going to be a market that moves the needle, so to speak, for the entire U.S. beef industry, we do anticipate that a few companies will find opportunities in Australia. And as we like to say, every market is big to someone. And if a few U.S. companies find opportunities and can develop business relationships in Australia, that delivers benefits for both sides.
That is US Meat Export Federation's Joe Sheely speaking to Megan Hughes.
Matches Turtle, cattle class, tow drive for Sherbert Livestock. We're all flat out. Give us plenty of room on the road and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Yeah, if we head to the Beetaloo Basin, gas company Tamboran Resources is suddenly on the hunt for a brand new chief executive. I'm joined in the studio by Fiona Broom. What's happening?
Joel Riddle has stepped down as the CEO and Managing Director of Tamboran. And the board chair, Dick Stoneburner, has been appointed the interim CEO until a new successor is found. So the search is on for a new chief executive of Tamboran. There's also been some changes to the board of directors announced today, Matt. Two new appointees there and one member is stepping down. Mr. Stoneburner has said that the company remains committed to its gas project in the Beetaloo and its sales agreement with the Northern Territory government. He's also paid tribute to Joel Riddle, who joined the company as CEO in 2013.
Oh, so he's put in 12 years or
12 years, yeah. Mr. Stoneburner saying that Joel Riddle has overseen Tamboran's transformation from early stage natural gas exploration to the brink of commercial production, and that under his leadership, Tamboran has successfully acquired and expanded its key assets and operations, and that's resulted in the company becoming the largest acreage holder and operator in the Beetaloo Basin. They've got about just shy of 2 million net prospective acres there.
There you go. Alrighty. So the biggest player in the Beetaloo needs a new boss. Thanks for that, Fiona. Still plenty to come in the second half of the Country Hour, including an update on why there's mounting pressure to release a herpes virus in the Murray Darling. But now let's go to the newsroom, 1 o'clock.
G'day, I'm Bill West. I've been skippering trawlers in the NPF for 43 years, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you on this Monday lunchtime. In a moment, you'll hear from the head stockman of Argadargada Station. He and his team are getting ready to start their second round of mustering. How's the season going out there on the Sandover Highway? You'll find out soon. And before 1:30, we take a very close look at the most colourful cows that were on show at Royal Darwin over the long weekend. Maybe you spied them. Purples, blues, yellows. Just incredible cows. I'll tell you more about this in a moment. And we're hearing from you this afternoon. The text number is 0487 991057. Jack in Larrakia says, Matt, regarding that double J, triple J poll on the weekend, while I haven't listened to either of them for 30 or 40 years, I suspect that most of the people voting were kids and would have never have heard of Slim Dusty, let alone anything older than 25 years. See, I feel your frustration, Jack, but I'm not sure about that. Isn't the whole idea of double J, it's set up for people that might have listened to Triple J decades ago and have got a bit long in the tooth. I'm pretty sure that's what double J is about. Still can't believe that 100 Australian songs and there wasn't room for not one country tune. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch is there. Billy, are you as
furious as the Country Hours audience about this?
I've kind of missed. I missed the whole thing, really.
You've missed the thing, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't aware it was happening until it was happening, so I didn't vote, and I didn't listen to it either.
You wouldn't be alone, but 2.6 million people did.
Yeah.
That's how many votes they got.
Yeah.
And no room for John Williamson, Smokey Dawson, Slim Dusty, Tex Morton, Troy Cassidaly, Keith Urban, Ted Egan. The list goes on and on.
The City Slickers must have dominated the voting.
Must have. I mean, I don't want to poo-poo the people that made the 100. I just feel Slim should have been given one spot.
That would have been cool.
Anyway, speaking of spots, there's been a bit of rain around. Here we are at the back end of July, and I want to ask you, Billy Lynch, what were some of the rainfall figures for the weekend gone?
Yes, and Matt Brown, I can actually give you a few rainfall figures. So the 72-hour rainfall list, it does miss that main rain band that came through with the cold front last week, where Curtin Springs picked up 20 to 25 mils. So this is just after that. But the Alice Springs region around the Todd catchment has had another sort of 1 to 3 millimetres. That's places like the airport and Wiggly Gorge, Bond Springs, Mount Sir Charles, etc. And then further north, Elliot's had 0.6 of a mil, Snowdrop Creek 0.4, Daly Waters 1 mil, Gorry Station 3 mils. The Upper Waterhouse, it was just one shower on Saturday night, gave 15 millimetres.
Ooh.
And, 0.4 at Cape Wessel as well.
Okay. And in the top end this afternoon, there's enough cloud around. Are there any sprinkles tied up with it?
There are, yeah. There's already been a few sprinkles this morning. And if your listeners want to jump on the radar, you can see if you can spot the shower, because there's a few little showers popping up here and there.
I can. I can see. It looks like there's just a moment of action to the east of Coolpinya Station and the Tiwi Islands. A little bit of moisture up there today.
Yeah, I think there's a few showers popping up over Kakadu National Park as well.
What's the week ahead looking like for the Northern Territory in general, Billy?
Well, starting in the top end, we're pretty much stuck with this humidity until a dry southeasterly surge arrives, and we're not expecting that until Friday. So between now and Friday, it's going to continue to be humid, and we're going to continue to see a few of these unseasonal showers. Further south today, the main thing that's happening is a trough moving into central Australia. So warm temperatures, quite gusty northwesterly winds ahead of that trough. At Alice Springs Airport, we've seen a 61 kilometre per hour wind gust about an hour or so ago. So, yeah, windy, warm, and also with a few showers. So Alice Springs radar is showing some showers on it as well, mainly south of town. So in general, be probably less than a millimetre across the territory today, but possibly south of Alice Springs by the end of the day, there could be as much as 5 millimetres with these showers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I've just brought up the Alice radar, and yeah, it looks like Wally at Orange Creek might be getting a drop or three, and Tichikala, a bit of moisture there. Can you tell us more about the opportunity for rain in the Barkly this week?
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, this trough will start to move northwards from tomorrow, push across the Barkly during, tomorrow and Wednesday. Just rounding out the story through southern NT, it's all going to clear out and be cool and sunny for the rest of the week. But yeah, cloud band expected to develop across the Barkly from Wednesday. Probably just, yeah, pretty light showers on the Wednesday, but from Wednesday night into Thursday, it should start to see some more widespread rain areas develop, particularly the eastern Barkly district rather than the western. And at this stage, we're predicting 5 to 15 millimetres through there.
Rightio.
Yeah.
So that makes for an interesting week, Billy Lynch.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, then. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
Appreciate it. That's Billy Lynch there at the Weather Bureau. It's 12 past one. You are tuning into the Country Hour. If you missed the start of today's program, then you missed our story about the official launch of a brand new fishing trawler. It happened on the weekend. The vessel is called Australia Bay. It's a big boat, and its job now is to go out there and catch plenty of tropical snappers for the company Australia Bay Seafoods. I've got a text here from Ian and Bayini who say, Matt, regarding NT Fisheries, it was great to hear of some new investment of a sustainable fishing practice. Conversely, we are still waiting to hear about the ceasing of NT commercial barra netting, even though its biomass and sustainability is not in question. And the wasted investment in the newly announced fish processing plant, as Bill Passy said, confidence in government regulations is key to this industry. That text on 0487 99 1057.
Hi, my name is Trent McDonald and I'm from Arena Station.
Hi, my name is Liam. I am Liam Tutu and I'm from Kicks in the Park.
Hi, my name is Lynn and we live out of town.
We are listening to the Country Hour.
It's a Monday lunchtime, Matt Brown with you. Now, Agadagada Station on the Sandover Highway is getting ready to start its second round of muster. And according to the head stockman, Tom Gordon, the year is going pretty well. Tom caught up with our reporter, Charles Geary, about what he's loving about the job and what's keeping his team busy.
No, we're going well there at the moment. We've gotten through our first round of mustering and we're starting to do a few improvements to the place and we'll get it in the second round shortly. But no, all going well. We've had a really good season and the cattle are looking good. The country's still holding up. So no, it's been a good year so far.
That first muster all went to plan. No major hiccups along the way weren't held up by some of that weather we had in May.
Yeah, we did do a bit of mustering and then we were held up for 2-3 weeks there, with even a month with that rain. And after that, we got into it and everyone sort of hit the ground running. We had a few returning staff, so no, it was a good start to the year.
What are some of those improvements you're doing out around there now, just before you head back out into the paddocks for another muster?
We're setting up a few tanks and we've put a few grids in. Yeah, there's some, like a few tank squares and that sort of thing. They're just little things getting the place better, yeah.
We were chatting earlier and you've mentioned that this is your fourth year here in the Territory. Talk to us a little bit about your time here in the Territory and where it's taken you from originally at the Lake Nass station before moving over.
Yeah, I've come here as a first year and I just haven't left. I've enjoyed my time here very, very much in the Territory, and I found the people have made it what it is. Everyone I meet is very accommodating and they want to help you out, so that's a huge reason why I've stayed. And I did those first 2 years at Lake Nash working in the stock camp there, and then last year I was given the opportunity to step into a role as a head stockman and move down to the outstation at Agadagada. And yeah, no, they've looked after me very well there at Lake Nash. It's been great.
So you've just said last couple of years you've moved into that head stockman role. How have you found the extra responsibility and the leadership there?
Yeah, when I first jumped into the role, it felt like a lot, but I had some great support through my managers and they got me through. I've found people is definitely the hardest thing to get around in those management roles, but yeah, just I found sort of treating people with respect is probably the best way to get the best out of people and the best out of yourself.
What has kept you here in these roles for so long, working in these massive pastoral leases?
I think it's just been the opportunities, and I've been very fortunate to have a great team of management that I work with and above me, and that have given me multiple opportunities to improve and and grow in the industry. So that's a huge reason why I've stayed so long. Yeah, my favorite part. I'm huge into horses, so I love the horse work, the stock work. Yeah, but I also just love the variety. Like, one day you'll be driving a truck, the next you'll be mustering, the next you'll be in the yards, and then the next you'll be bull running. There's huge variety, and I enjoy sort of every part of it, yeah.
Does this indicate maybe a bit more time here in the territory, a bit more of the future here in the pastoral industry?
Yeah, I don't see myself leaving anytime soon. I really see a future in it, and think there's a lot of opportunity within the industry, so I don't think I'll be leaving anytime soon.
So we're obviously not out there on the Sandover Highway today. We're here in Alice Springs. 6-hour drive, I've been told. How's the road looking coming in from out that way?
Yeah, the Sandover, it's a bit bumpy on the way in, but we got here. But yeah, no, it gets like that with the rain and all, and how much traffic it gets. But yeah, we got here in the end, so yeah.
Is it just those corrugations keeping you on the edge of your seat for the 6 hours before you get on that Stuart Highway?
Yeah, that's right. As soon as you hit the I think the plenty is where the bitumen starts, and then the good bitumen's at the Stuart. So yeah, you're really waiting for the you're counting down the time to get to the bitumen. Yeah, for sure.
That is Tom Gordon, who's the head stockman at Argadagada Station, speaking to Charles Geary. So that property, it's on the Sandover Highway. It's about 500 kilometres, give or take, to the northeast of Alice Springs. Good to have Tom on the program. And we're hearing from you this afternoon. Our text number is 0487 99 1057. Someone here says the film Oceans with David Attenborough should be compulsory viewing for everyone in the fishing industry. Bottom trawling must stop, says someone on the text line, no name attached. I can tell you that the net's been used on that brand new trawler. They don't hit the bottom at all. And I got a text here from Alan saying, Matt, any chance you could tell us about the rainfall in the drought areas of South Australia and Victoria? Poor buggers have been doing it very tough, and we only get a rough idea where rain has been on the 7 o'clock news. Well, I'm joined in the studio by Fiona Broome, who's got a few answers for you. Alan, there's been some decent rain over the weekend period?
Yeah, decent rain.
For those areas in drought?
Yes, indeedy. Western Victoria, near the South Australia border, one property that they're reporting 38 millimetres, decent drop, only bringing them to 200 millimetres total for the year, though, so still looking very, very dry, but they are celebrating that 38 millimetres, sort of around the inch mark for folks across other regions. My brother in rural South Australia, mm-hmm. He got about 20 millimetres in the gauge at the weekend. So a little bit of rain starting to come through those dry and dusty parts of southeastern Australia.
Yeah, and I think the 8-day forecast is looking kind to those with winter crop in the ground. So
yes.
Fingers crossed. Now, while you're here, Fiona, tell us all, why is there a push to release a herpes virus into the Murray-Darling?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Matt. It is all about European carp.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers at the moment that the Murray-Darling Association is sharing is saying 90% of the fish biomass in parts of the Murray-Darling Basin now is European carp.
90%?
Yes.
Is carp. God, yeah.
So that association, they represent councils and communities in the basin, and they're calling on the federal government to release a herpes virus that affects carp. So a few years back in 2022, the government released the National Carp Control Plan, and that was talking about the potential release of a herpes virus that it's hoped could reduce carp numbers by up to 60%. There'll still be a few carp left, but that's all right. They say they can deal with that. There's been some hesitation, though, about this releasing this virus because of concerns about the wider implications of...
You want to get it right.
100%, mm-hmm. Yep. So a year later, 2023, the federal and state ag ministers, they said, we'll carry out a bit more research. Mark Lamb from the Murray-Darling Association, though, he's saying that carp have reached epidemic proportions in the basin and it's time for that virus to be released?
Ultimately, you know, the problem is not getting any smaller. So we understand, but this has been used overseas. It's been tested. We know that it doesn't impact on other species, but obviously they're doing further research to prove that. We know that it doesn't impact on human consumption. So, you know, it is deemed to be relatively safe. Now, I know they obviously want to make sure there are no unintended consequences, and that's why we're trying to work with the government to make sure that this is implemented safely.
That's Mark Lamb from the Murray-Darling Association. So the concern around the safety of releasing this virus, there's no native species that share, I guess, genetics with this carp family in Australia. About 10 years ago, CSIRO scientists exposed a bunch of native fish and trout and frogs, etc., to high levels of the virus, and they said that none showed any clinical signs of infection.
Okay. So the push, there's a lot of people calling for the virus to be released. Doesn't mean it's going to happen anytime soon, though.
Not that we've heard.
But they want it. Okay, thank you.
I'm Lockie Bear. I'm from Monogeny Station in the Northern Territory. And you're listening to the ABC Country Hour.
It is 23 past one. If you went to the Royal Darwin Show on the weekend, I wonder if you spotted some very unusual-looking cows. I'm talking about a bunch of very colourful, two-dimensional wooden cows that have been painted by Northern Territory school kids. It's organised by the NT Cattlemen's Association. It's called the Cows for Schools Competition. The NTCA's Tash Clayton explains it all.
Yeah, so we do it from top to bottom across the territory. So we've been at all the shows, Alice, Catherine and Darwin now. And what we do is we spread, we've got blank canvas cows and we give them to schools across the regions. And each year we have a different theme or a different category, and we get them to do a project and then we give them free rein. So this year was moo management, and it's been interpreted in a few different ways. It's been fantastic, really good engagement with early childhood. So it's primarily preschool and primary school, just to get there in the classrooms talking about ag and what moo management means. And some of them have just done beautiful pieces of artwork, and some of them have gone down into looking what is cow management and what does that look like. And I'm just looking at one in front of me and it's caring for cows and the environment. It's about boars and water, and it's got photos of road trains and all sorts of cool things on it. So it's great to see come back full circle that the things we care about, schools are talking about it as well.
Yeah, some of these are extremely detailed and they've really dug into the industry and learnt about what happens within the Northern Territory's cattle industry. This one caught my eye. You were talking about it before, the difference in the cattle between the north of Australia and the south.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've got a beautiful little map here, and a line across the middle, which probably isn't too accurate, but it's fantastic for school-age kids. And it's got the differences in cattle that you find in Northern Australia and Southern Australia. So they've gone outside of the NT, and they've got Brahman on here. They've got all your Angus, your Hereford, Shorthorn, everything. And they've posted beautiful pictures all over it. So that one's my personal favourite, but I'm trying not to be too biased in this process.
And you've had people coming past and putting in their votes for their favourite cows. How much engagement have you had at the show here?
Yeah, it's definitely different at all the shows. At the Darwin show here, we like to make sure the colourful cows are up the front so we catch the kids' eyes and they come in and bring mum and dad in. I'd probably say, would you say there's 50 little slips in there at least? And we're at 2 o'clock today and we'll be here for the rest of the afternoon and tomorrow. So hopefully we'll clock in a few more. It also gives a really good opportunity for those kids to drag their parents down and show them how proud they are of their work, and have a really good chat with mum and dad about, even though the kids are a little bit too young to start talking about industry careers, like opening that door for them.
Well, I don't think you can ever be too young. The cattle judging area is right next to us, and I was looking at the cutest little cowgirls I've ever seen. They were about knee-high and fully dressed up. Like, they fully have a career in cattle ahead of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just talking to the college students and the teachers who are running the show, and they said this year that they've had a record number of entries. I think definitely we've seen that side of things drop off at the show, and it's really, really good to hear that it's picked right back up. And yeah, there's some beautiful, fat, happy cows over there, and I'm about to watch them go and do the grand parade, which is really, really exciting, and something really proud.
I reckon the students outnumber the adults here.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And they've been there all afternoon, padding, playing with their cow. I don't think I've seen any of them leave that region. Like, they're all over there with their big hats and very, very proud of their cows with the blue ribbons and colourful ribbons. So it's really, really nice to see, yeah.
And is that school engagement, building that pipeline of education into industry, is that really important in the Northern Territory?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely really, really important. To Minmin down there and probably some other schools, but it's not just those kids that they get to talk about their cows, they also get to go home and talk to their siblings about what they're doing in ag. It's got a much wider spread, and it's the ripple effect. So we've got like a pretty good show of people. And we're in Darwin City, so we've got some, you know, more of our city folk down here hanging over the fence looking at the cows, because this is their only opportunity to see ag up close.
What brought you into the industry?
I grew up riding horses, so I didn't have too much to do with ag, and then I just found myself wanting to get that part of my personal life that I love into my everyday life. So now I get to come to work, and it's not work. I could do this. I mean, here I am on a public holiday. I love it. It's just the best place in the world to work. NTCA, obviously love it, but I can't see myself leaving the industry. So I originally went down the university path. I didn't think that, even though I love being outdoors and I love the country lifestyle, that there was really anything for me. So I went down a law background, and I've made my way back to ag. Even though I didn't think that that was a career opportunity possible when I did that degree, it's opened so many doors for me when I start to see operationally how many spots there are that could use my skills. So I think it's really important that we love that, you know, that agriculture is so broad, and we need all of those professions. Yeah,
it's not just hands-on with the cattle. There's so much more to the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm just feeling very blessed.
It's Tash Clayton from the NT Cattlemen's Association speaking to Fiona Broom at the Royal Darwin Show. So that competition now in its ninth year and has reached over 1,000 primary school students across the territory, which is great. On the text line this afternoon, someone says, we used to have so much fun playing carp cricket with carp that we caught on the Murray River. I'm trying to picture how a bit hard to bowl a googly with a carp. We used to throw them up on the banks. And I remember one year the bloke who ran the pub at Louth told us to actually bury them because they were concerned that birds were pecking open a dead carp and potentially still spreading the eggs into the river. I keep looking at this ABC Hot 100 countdown of Australian songs. This song, nowhere to be seen.
Oh, they got some bloody good drinkers in the Northern Territory. From Darwin down to Alice Springs, they're always on a spree. From out on the Barkly Tableland and across to Fiardi. They got some bloody good drinkers in the Northern Territory.
What sort of countdown is it? That's it for today's Country Hour. Thanks for tuning in. Keep it rural.
It was at Mount Wedge, which is right on the edge of the Spinifex and Sandhills. I produced a bottle of rum and I...